I'm sorry, I didn't hear anything you said after that reference, that song reference. I'm just sitting here thinking, did that actually happen? Did I hear that?
I have no idea where that came from.
Do I need to call Darren's family and say, hey, I'm a little concerned about him?
This is a welfare call, welfare check. Is that what?
It's time for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast.
Welcome back, sports fans. Fresh off the NFL playoffs, the NFC and AFC championship games this past weekend. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But we have nothing new to report about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. You'll have to find other media outlets to find what's going on with them. We've got nothing.
I've got a diagram of how she's going to get from Japan to – we're not – oh, okay, never mind.
Oh, goodness.
That was 3 hours I'll never get back. Thanks, whatever.
I guess you could say the NFL got what it wanted in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I got to say, if Detroit would have won and a Taylor Swift M&M Super Bowl, that would have been pretty interesting as well. But, you know.
You know, Eminem reacted a little differently to Niners fans than Taylor Swift reacts to fans of the Ravens or whoever they're playing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got his own way. Is that a way to say that?
Well, there, let's just move on from that. And let's get to our headlines, which we're starting with the top 25 men and women's basketball AP polls. Update for this week. On the men's side, Tennessee still holding at number 5. Kentucky slipped to number 10. Auburn at 16. Oklahoma at 23. And Alabama coming into the rankings at 25. On the women's side of things, number 1 ranked South Carolina after a big win in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
Then number 9 LSU and number 12 Texas. So those are your most up-to-date AP top 25 polls. We also have some coaching news to mention as on the college football front, and that is LSU. We asked for it last week, or I asked for it.
Yeah, exactly. You put it on your late Christmas list, and well.
They now have an offensive coordinator. In fact, they have two. Joe Sloan and Cortez Hankton, who almost – looked like was going to the Falcons. He interviewed for that OC job, but he's coming back to LSU. So those two coaches will take the reins to guide the LSU offense in 2024.
And you know, it's interesting that's the approach and how common running game coordinator, passing game coordinator, how common that is now. And you know, I think it really started to kind of come to prominence during kind of the USC run. You know, I remember, was it Norm Chow was like the offensive coordinator at USC, and he was the running game coordinator, and the Lane Kiffin, that was really when he kind of started to get his break and slip in a little bit. He became kind of right in the middle of that run. He became the passing game coordinator. And it was really, at least to me, one of the first occurrences of that I remember getting that much attention. And now, you know, it's a pretty common thing. You hear it quite a bit. And I think it's obviously, it looks like it's something, two very qualified candidates, you would think. Looks like it's hopefully something that's going to work really well for LSU.
Yeah, quarterback Garrett Nussmeier has already given it his stamp of approval. And so that's always a good sign that you want to see when you make such a hire.
Absolutely.
Going back to college basketball, a couple of things. The first one is we have a big-time matchup coming this Saturday in the SEC. As mentioned, Tennessee at number 5, Kentucky at number 10. Game's going to be Saturday at 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. Tennessee going strong. Kentucky, some disappointing losses. South Carolina, that was a tough
one.
That's
tough,
So there's, like a lot of teams in Calipari's tenure, immense amount of talent, Darren, but they struggle to figure things out and to play together.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. There really seems to be a chemistry. And when I say that, I don't feel like it's a locker room thing. I guess a better way to say it would be a floor chemistry. It's like they can't, even if they do find their groove, which we have seen Calipari's teams do in the past, there always seems to be a point during the season where they kind of lose their groove, where it's easily disrupted. There's something that throws it off. Maybe it's an injury. Maybe somebody goes into a shooting slump. Anything can kind of throw it off. And then the entire floor chemistry is off, and they slump. And most of the time, more times than not, maybe that's a better way to say that, more times than not, they come out of it and typically finish strong. Even if it starts, there's been a couple of times, more than a couple, honestly. There's been several times that the season started off just like you could tell. These five guys have not had enough floor time together. You watch the first two or three games, even against inferior opponents, and it's like, have you guys met? Have you guys met at all? Yeah. Is this the first time you've played basketball together? And so I think you're exactly right. That's what we're seeing. They didn't start out necessarily strong. Really kind of climbed a little bit and have hit that little slump where whatever it is has thrown off the floor chemistry and you can really see it.
Yeah, it's always a challenge when you have players for maybe a year, yep. If you're lucky two, as opposed to getting them for 3 or 4 years. There's no question he brings in the talent to Kentucky. You look at the number of players that have been at Kentucky that have gone to the NBA. But like you just said about the offense, it just seems like more often than not, they're not clicking. It's not a well-run offense. And I don't know if that's just the players' lack of familiarity with each other or everyone's just trying to create their own thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think this will be a good game against Tennessee.
And it'll be a good test of everything we just talked about because – Tennessee and this, hurts my feelings to say everything I'm about to say. That being said, Rick Barnes is doing what Rick Barnes does this season. They look impressive on the defensive end of the floor. Their offense is smooth. I actually like this team better than last year's team. I feel like there's a stronger basketball identity. I think last year's team, and this could be just because it's Tennessee. Other people might not have seen it this way, but I felt like last year's team, there were some guys on the team that worried a little bit more about having that Detroit Pistons bad boys kind of image. And I feel like this year's team has Sakai Ziegler's personality. Hard work on the floor, pushes, but it's all about basketball tempo, and you can tell that's their concern on both ends of the floor is to press and to be aggressive strictly from a basketball perspective. And I appreciate that about this team. And I think Kentucky is going to pose a test for them, but it's going to be a much harder test for Kentucky. This Tennessee team is strong.
Yeah, that's a great point, Darren. What I think it's going to come down to is, you remember that epic moment in the movie Miracle where he's trying to get that team to come together? They're from different colleges. Mm-hmm. They're rivals. Mm-hmm. They don't like each other. And he's trying to impress on them that the name on the front of the jersey means a whole lot more than the name on the back of the jersey.
Absolutely.
I think whoever wins between Kentucky and Tennessee Saturday, it will be the ones who are playing for the name on the front of the jersey rather than the name on the back.
And I think we can honestly, without being whatever toward either team, I think the scales tip toward Rick Barnes and a proven track record of being able to do that, not to take anything away from Calipari. But when it comes to that specific topic, I think the scales tip toward Rick Barnes. I really don't think you can dispute that, truthfully.
No. They're both good coaches looking forward to the game on Saturday night. Past week, we had a epic matchup in Baton Rouge, the number one ranked South Carolina Gamecocks against the they were 9 at the time, the LSU Tigers. A great great game for women's college basketball. The arena was full, packed. It was not the result that LSU fans wanted. South Carolina ended up winning 76-70. Even though LSU dominated the first half, it looked like they've got this game in hand. But mistakes, costly mistakes, bad fouls. Angel Reese fouled out with 4 minutes and 2 seconds to go. And South Carolina promptly ended the game on an 11-3 run. So I know Angel Reese is a great player. She finished with 15 points, 8 rebounds, I think, in 29 minutes of action.
Yep.
But they had South Carolina on the ropes, a South Carolina team that has now won 28 straight road games. And you've got to be able to step up. You want Angel Reese out there, but she fouled out, and her fifth foul was a horrible foul.
Yeah.
Horrible.
It definitely was.
But when that happens, someone else has to – it's a next man up mentality, and I think LSU looked a little shell-shocked. Oh, my goodness, you know, our star player isn't out here. And so I think Coach Mulkey's got – you know, she's got some work still to do with this team to get them to not lose their their poise in such situations.
Well, and I think she was concerned coming into the game about 6 through 10. And who is next man step up? Because even the commentators were talking about it during the first half. She did not sub. She knew 1 through 5 was the shot to win the game, and didn't have the confidence. Or to me, when you don't sub to that extreme, that's what it says, that you have confidence that 1 through 5 can win you the game, and 6 through 10 are not giving you the same shot. And I think that's acknowledging exactly what you just said. It's not that LSU is a bad team. It's not that those five players, whoever 6 through 10 is on that depth chart, are bad players. But it's the reality of, I mean, what are we? This is her third year. Is that correct? At LSU? Okay. You're still building a program. You're still building a roster at that point. Even if it's your fourth year, you know, you're filling it out. It feels like I've stumped us. My bad.
Yeah.
I feel like she started.
Wasn't that the whole knock about Brian Kelly that Mulkey and Johnson on baseball won national championships in their second year?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this is her third season because she won the national championship in the second year. So 3 years in, you're still building your roster. I don't care who you are. I don't care what the program is. So for her to have the talent at 1 through 5 to hang with the number one in the country is magnificent in year three. The rest will come. Obviously, she's done it, you know, at Baylor. She's been successful. Just didn't work at this time. They got tired. They started making silly mistakes and fouls, and you could see it happening. You could see kind of the progression of as they got tired. Because honestly, you were talking about Angel Reese's foul. She just reached and grabbed that girl. That was an I'm tired foul. She just reached out and grabbed her. That's exactly what that was.
Yeah, and you can't do that. It hurt the rest of the team.
Yep.
But give credit to South Carolina. They're the number one team for a reason. They are loaded. I was
absolutely
very impressed with their guard play. Their outside shooting was better than LSU's, especially from the three-point line. So right now, South Carolina, number one team in the country. I know there's a lot of attention from a Big Ten team up north, but I don't think you can put anybody ahead of South Carolina right now.
No. And I'll tell you, and I'll apologize in advance. I'll be very quick because I can't remember names, so I won't spend a whole lot of time on it. But the player for LSU that played point most of the night,
Haley Van Lith.
The girl that was guarding her from South Carolina, she may be one of the quickest, agile defenders that I've seen in women's college basketball. Mm-hmm. She was so you could tell. She frustrated her and kept her on edge. And she wasn't playing this overly aggressive style of defense. She was just that good at how she defended her and how, I mean, she was just everywhere she went, she was right there. She was very, very, and I apologize, I can't remember her name. She was impressive, the level of defense that she played.
two of the big holes left in the LSU team from last year, size in the middle, yep. the center position, and also the point guard position. And LSU yep. doesn't have the size they had last year and point guard position. I'm not sure Van Litt, that's the best position for her to play. I think she's playing it out of necessity, but I look at her more as a two guard. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree completely.
Because a girl can shoot the lights out, but it's hard to do that when you're the ball handler.
And in the moments when they put her in the two position, there was a few times during the game she put her in, you could see it in her shot. Mm-hmm. Her shot was relaxed. Her form looked better. She is a natural two, and you can tell it because, like I said, you could see even when it just in how her shot looked when she was in that two position.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's move on and take a listen to This Week in Sports History.
February 2nd, 1959, Vince Lombardi accepts a 5-year contract as the head coach and general manager of the Green Bay Packers. Lombardi was one of the most successful and influential coaches in the history of American football. Lombardi began his coaching career at high school and college level, where he developed his philosophy of discipline, hard work, and excellence. He then joined the New York Giants as an assistant coach in 1959, where he helped them win a league title in 1959. However, Lombardi was not satisfied with being a subordinate and wanted to be in charge of his own team. The Packers were a struggling franchise that had not had a winning season in 11 years. Lombardi immediately imposed his rigorous and demanding style on the players, who responded with loyalty and respect. He transformed the Packers into a dominant force, winning 6 division titles, 5 NFL championships, and 2 Super Bowls in 9 seasons. Lombardi's decision to sign with the Packers was a turning point in his career and in the history of the NFL. He established himself as one of the greatest coaches of all time and inspired generations of players and coaches with his legacy. His name is now synonymous with the Super Bowl trophy, the ultimate prize in professional football.
Oh, thank you.
As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the NFL playoffs continued this past weekend with the AFC and the NFC championship games. Over on the AFC side, Kansas City went into top-ranked Baltimore, pulled out a 17-10 victory.
Yep.
Of course, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, big-time games. The defense, though, yep. from Kansas City stepped up. Lamar Jackson did not have a good game. And
no.
We got to give a shout out, Darren, on the what looked like a Zay Flowers touchdown where he fumbled. L'Jarius mm-hmm. Sneed was in on that play. L'Jarius Sneed played at Louisiana Tech, but he's from Minden, which is just about 22 miles east of where we are right now. Wait, is that east? Which way?
It is if we say it is. So yeah.
But what can you say, Darren, about this? Kansas City just keeps rolling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was their 6th AFC championship game. Now they're going to the Super Bowl 4th time in 5 years. Is that correct? I mean, to me, one of the most exciting things about it is it's good to see, man, I hate when names just disappear. The head coach, who I've called by name in conversation 3 times tonight before we started recording. Andy Reid, thank you.
Been a long day, huh?
Andy Reid. Yeah, exactly. What's a football? All right. So, Andy Reid, it's exciting to see him have this level of success. And I think we actually even talked about that one of the other times that they were in the Super Bowl. So, fun to watch from that perspective. And I mean, obviously you and I both thought the Ravens were, you know, I'll go old school, we pulled out our Creskin hats, you know, Johnny Carson, how's that for an old reference? And yeah, we were wrong. But it was a fun game. It was a good game. You have to at least say that.
Turnovers, missed opportunities. That is usually, those are the culprits behind almost every loss. And we saw that
had three.
Yeah. We saw that in the NFC. I think we saw that in the NFC championship game as well, where Detroit came out with a first half, a dominant performance. At one point, I believe they were up 24-7. They go on to lose to the San Francisco 49ers, 34-31, absolute heartbreaking loss for the Detroit Lions after such an incredible season, a big start in this championship game. But in the second half, it was a much different story.
Yeah, just, I mean, I don't know. Obviously it was a collapse, but it was a matter, I think it was just a matter of, honestly, I think San Francisco made the adjustments that Detroit didn't. I think Detroit went into the locker room at halftime up by 17 thinking what we're doing is working, let's keep going. And San Francisco said, well, obviously nothing we're doing is working, and made the necessary adjustments. And you could see it on both sides of the ball. It looked like a completely different team as far as how effective they were against Detroit. There was definitely a different level of being able to move the ball. They started really shutting down the offense. It was an ugly second half if you're a Detroit fan. An ugly second half.
I'm not sure I buy that completely, Darren. I think turnovers and missed opportunities. There was a potential interception that bounced off the
that's very true
face mask. That should have been an interception. There was a big conversion. And was it Reynolds, a wide receiver, right in the breadbasket, and he dropped it.
Yep.
Those kind of things are killer. I know people want to get on Dan Campbell's case about his decision on fourth down not to kick the field goal to tie it up. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of how Detroit's been playing all year. And
very true.
We want to magnify something like that. But really, when you get down to it, football is a pretty simple game. You execute.
Yeah.
You typically win. If you don't execute, you lose, including not making catches, missing tackles, missing an interception that was clearly there. Dropping passes. Now, the one thing that I did think was a bad call was toward the end of the game when they were on the goal line running the ball. I think you needed to keep your three timeouts to make San Francisco possibly punt. At that point, it was onside kick recovery or bust, and you know how well that goes in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I will say this, going back to the call to kick the field goal, I'm in 1,000% agreement, no matter anything else I think about any kind of scheme or game plan. The thing I applaud about that is it's what I think you can genuinely say it's what he would have done in the regular season. And I applaud the fact that in that moment, he didn't seize up and overthink it. Well, maybe I should do something different. This is the NFC champ. He did what he would have done in the regular season. And I applaud that.
On the other side, Brock Purdy made plays.
Yep.
And he made plays with his legs. The scrambling, I think that caught Detroit off guard, got the defense off balance. Brock Purdy made some big plays when he needed to make big plays. Not spectacular, but those runs for first downs, I don't think Detroit was expecting that.
No, I agree completely. And I think it very clearly, it was one of the biggest differences in the game. His ability to, like you said, it's not this Lamar Jackson level of execution or Lamar Jackson level of spectacular, but it's a level of execution where this needs to happen. He got it done with his legs. And even on that level, I don't think they were expecting that. And it made a large difference, a big difference in the game.
Made the plays when he needed to. It proved to be the difference in the 3-point victory. So the Super Bowl will feature for a second time in recent memory, the Kansas City Chiefs against the San Francisco 49ers.
I think
you ready to make a pick?
Yeah, I'm good with that. You want me to go first?
Who you got?
I think just from everything we just talked about, I don't know how you pick against the Chiefs. I mean, it would be awesome story to see Brock Purdy, a guy that was picked last in the draft, be a Super Bowl champion. But, I mean, there's just something about you can talk all you want about what we're going to do when we're out on the field with Patrick Mahomes and this Kansas City offense. But when you get out there and the scheme and the talent hit you, it's a little bit different. And I think that's going to be the case. So it might be cliche, but I'm going to go with the Chiefs. How about you?
I'm thinking about going with the Niners. I've got a outrageous idea that's so crazy it just might work.
Okay.
Put George Kittle on Travis Kelce.
He would know what he was going to do, probably.
it's obvious Patrick Mahomes is a superstar. Brock Purdy isn't. Brock Purdy is a good quarterback, but Patrick Mahomes is just on a different level.
Right.
So, but I wonder with the other intangibles, something's going to happen that we're not expecting. It comes down to who's going to make plays. No. And so maybe I'm just being contentious with you tonight, Darren, but I'm going to pick the Niners.
Well, if the Niners had Roger Craig, Tom Rathman, you know, Joe Montana, I might pick those Niners.
Jerry Rice.
Yeah, exactly. Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott, you know.
Well, speaking of making some outrageous picks, we have a way too early segment tonight. We are going to make our picks for the top three teams in the SEC for the 2024 season. I know it's only January. This is completely ludicrous. We're setting ourselves up for all kinds of criticism because your top three picks will probably look different than our top three. And really at this point, I think almost all of us, Darren, we kind of sneak in our team. I mean, unless you're a Vanderbilt fan.
Yeah.
And no one would listen to the podcast if you put Vanderbilt in the top three.
I'd try to sneak them into the middle. That'd be my.
So let's get right to it. As you look at the 2024 season with no East-West divisions in the SEC, who's your number one team? Who you think is going to be the top dog?
Well, you know, when we were top dog, well done. We were talking about how cliche it might be to pick Kansas City, but I'm going to be cliche and predictable again. I don't know how you pick against Kirby Smart and what he's doing at Georgia. That's going to be my number one pick. It is the Georgia Bulldogs. Don't come in second place in 2024. They come in first place. How about you? What's your number one pick?
I'm with you, Darren. This Georgia team is going to come into the upcoming season hungry. They're still angry about being left out of the four-team playoff. They've got something to prove this year. There's a fire lit under them. So I expect Georgia to be the top dog again in the SEC. How about your number two?
Well, in traditional SEC circles, this might not be a popular pick, but I think it's a realistic pick. So I'm going to go with one of the new kids in town. I think Texas finishes number two as the new kid on the block. They'll be hanging tough. No, nothing. All right. Texas is number two. I have no idea what just happened there. I apologize. I think Texas is bringing back a lot. They have Quinn Ewers. Sarkisian has done a ton of work to get that program both on the field and off the field where he wants it. And I think they have been – I think he's been building for the SEC. They're going to stumble a little bit. But I still think they can pull out a season that is a second place season in the SEC next year. So that's I'm going with them at number two.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear anything you said after that reference, that song reference. I'm just sitting here thinking, did that actually happen? Did I hear that?
I have no idea where that came from.
Do I need to call Darren's family and say, hey, I'm a little concerned about him?
This is a welfare call, welfare check. Is that what?
So you got Texas at your number two.
Texas number two.
Well, this is a completely homer pick, and since it's January, I can go ahead and make this pick. I'm going to say LSU.
That's right.
I really – people are going to be surprised how good Garrett Nussmeier is.
Yeah.
Now, he may not be Jaden Daniels level, but this is a good quarterback. I think the offense is reloading. They're not going to have to score 50 points a game this year to win because I think the defense is going to be, play much, much better. I'm excited to see the progression of the defense and how they play. So I'm willing to sneak them up into the two spot. Are you surprised?
You know, with all of the transition at coordinator, that's one of the things that gave me some, on both sides of the ball, gave me some apprehension. But I think it's a solid pick, especially as a fan. I think it's a solid pick.
Sometimes, as your team is learning to find its way, it's easier to be the hunter than to be the hunted. And I don't think anyone's going to put LSU at the top in the SEC. So that takes that bullseye off of them. And sometimes that works to your team's advantage.
And they're the ones taking the shot instead of being shot at. That can make a huge difference.
How about your number three?
I have extreme trepidation because this is a pick that even in weekly game picks, I think has never done me right. but I'm going to give it a shot one more time. I am throwing in my number three pick to the transfer portal king. I am going Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels. Now, I know they lost Quinshon Judkins. But man, they have brought in so much. I think they're, you know, number one or number two in the transfer portal class. They had a top 20 recruiting class. They signed somebody from Washington like either Friday over the weekend, like one of the offensive linemen. He's still bringing people in. I think he sees this year as, especially now that there are no divisions, even before Saban retired, Kiffin had everyone at Ole Miss on board with the idea of this year is our first real, we got to take this shot. Alabama is not going to stand in our way. We can, you know, we've got a shot at the playoffs. We've got a shot at the SEC championship, even if it's against Alabama. And that can get us to the playoffs, even if we lose in the championship game. So we've got to take this shot. And now that Saban has retired, you've got regime change in Alabama. I think that's just stoked the fire even more. They brought in even more people. They're bringing in staff. They've got a staff that I think would probably be the equivalent of about four on the field and off the field combined, probably about four Sun Belt teams. So, I mean, they're doing everything they can. So I'm going to believe that they can pull it off. Ole Miss is my number three. So Georgia one, Texas two, Ole Miss three. But who's your number three?
Well, Darren, hit me baby one more time. I'm going to go with Ole Miss as well.
Are you really?
I think Lane Kiffin was interested in the Alabama job. And they didn't even talk to him.
Right.
That's going to put a burr in his saddle. I think we're going to see a laser focused Lane Kiffin this upcoming season with an axe to grind and a big chip on his shoulder. I fully expect Ole Miss to be near the top of the SEC teams. And I'm going to go ahead and agree with you and put them at number three.
Awesome. We'll talk about
they don't play Alabama, unfortunately.
That's, That makes a big difference. And they don't have to play Vanderbilt this year, too. I mean, come on.
Well, there you go. maybe I need to put them at number two.
That's a path to the top. I'm just saying.
Well, that's way too early picks. Let us know how you disagree with us on those picks. Give us your top three picks, and we'll be happy to share them on the show next week.
Oh, yeah,
we'd love to hear from you to see who you think are going to be the top three teams in the SEC in 2024. Thank you for watching the show. Thank you for hanging with us throughout this season. We know this is kind of a dry time between the college football season ending, and we're waiting for March Madness to kick off. Baseball's just getting started. There's still a lot on the horizon, but it's a little bit of the, what are we in the in-between right now, kind of. So thank you for hanging with us. Remember, new episodes drop every Tuesday at 6 a.m. Click that subscribe button. Click the follow. Click the like button, and you'll get up to date on everything, every notification when something new comes out. We appreciate you so much, and until next week, y'all take care.
Have a great week.
Thank you for making the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast your go-to sports show. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show if you haven't already. Your feedback is so important. Let us know what you think about this week's show. Send an email to brewandshavers@gmail.com or a text to our text line 318-390-3599. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again for listening to the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast. See you next week.